As business owners, entrepreneurs, family men, it's difficult for us to find the time to put together projects like these. Even though it's something we really want to do, unfortunately, taking care of the things we have to take care of comes first. However, because of viewer support for people like you, we're able to continue doing this. Please consider joining our Patreon and supporting the Burn and Return podcast. Listening to Burn and Return, a weekly one-hour podcast covering news from the agricultural and turfgrass industries. With the DJ Scratch, you know what that means. That means it's time for Burn and Return. What's going on, everybody? My name is Matt. Sometimes I go by the Grass Factor Martin. Alongside me, we have Ryan DeMay and Ray Eno. Gentlemen, how in the hell are y'all doing? It is March 17th. Daylight savings time has come. It is lighter, darker. Boys, it is full-fledged time to fuck around and find out.
It is. There's no time better than the present to go out there and fuck something, and it might as well be some grass, right?
Yes, as a matter of fact. Either that, so, or as I was just texting someone, is I did see an adult dressed as a baby this weekend.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that was one I was hoping would get. Fucked by a dump truck or something, but unfortunately continued to walk down the street. That one scared the shit. Let me tell you, I grabbed my fam and made a noise out loud, like, oh! I was scared the shit out of me.
Oh, dear.
Thing is wearing a butt diaper and a pacifier.
I don't know.
It needs to get the fuck out of here.
I got to think from a fetish point of view that guy that's dressed up like the baby wants something else to drop loads on him besides a dump truck.
Oh my God. Oh.
Guessing. I'm just guessing.
How do you segue out of that? Speaking of dump trucks, let's check out
well, loads.
Loads. Headlines.
Dropping loads.
Oh man.
This is just the news. This is one of my favorites. I'm glad you threw this in here, DeMay. My good buddy out of Nashville, JW Josh Whitaker, is one of my Nashville boys. He sent me this article with no context. It was just the article, and I know exactly what he's thinking. Because he's an applicator, right? The No Mow May thing that we saw last year out west has moved east, and in Nashville, nonetheless, a home near a city near and dear to my heart, as it's roughly 140 miles away from me, and the capital of my state, they have pledged a No Mow April. Here is the beauty in that. Okay, the grass grows 4 inches a week in the month of April. Mm-hmm. So by the end of it, expect there to be foot and a half tall pastures all over. Then when they have to get this cut, they are going to pay an absolute fortune or invest a monumental amount of time. I'm curious, guys, where do you think more fuel is going to be burned? Having to cut down 18 to 24 inch tall grass or the four cuts of maintaining something at 4 inches?
Oh, I mean, there's no question about that. This is a horrible practice that, especially in the wrong climate, right? I think this was conceived in Wisconsin somewhere, which, it was No Mow May. Yeah, like, cool. That'll work maybe in Wisconsin. It'll be okay. But this proliferation of it, right, and making it be everywhere, especially in a place where, like what you just said, Matt, like you're at max growth rate on a lot of these lawns in Nashville when you're basically steaming headlong into the rogue wave here, Ray, and about mm-hmm. to get maybe dump trucked. I don't know. What would crawl through your mind if a client suggested this, right? What? How would that conversation go? Ray, I'd like to participate in No Mo May.
No problem. No problem for me. And you know why no problem for me?
STFU.
STFU is being applied at the beginning of the month exactly. I mean,
I'm going to take your lawn in a little bender and you can do whatever the fuck you want with it in May.
Yep. Because remember now, Ryan, Matt, somebody tells me a no mo time, which by the way, most people's lawns do go on no mo October. If you know, you know. That's when I break out the Cutlass, the Anu, and the Trinexapec. Yeah.
I mean, you know, look, I get it. There are
no
mo,
no problem.
That could probably keep people reduced to 12 cuts a year. Let's be honest, right? And but I will say that the people that are probably pledging to do this do not have any of this going on. And so it's I hope that they genuinely something happens that makes them realize when they go through four fuel ups of their Toro walk behind mower and 18 lawn bags full of grass clippings that they feel like an absolute run for the increased emissions that they ended up creating over this, right? Where normally, I have to fill up, you know, twice a month. Now they're doing a single cut took three fill ups, right? And and then the grass is going to be all wonky. And that is, look, May is right the start of disease season where we live. So imagine hacking off 18 inches of grass just to parlay right into. Do y'all hear some background music?
What is that? Somebody's phone right now?
I like
that.
It
was me. That
oh,
was
I
me.
Like that.
Somebody no, calling. That was somebody me. Heard it live and was like, no mo may for me, Ray. Put it on my account.
So Spencer has started calling Ray now instead of me. That's what's going on. Anyway.
Matt, I wish. I wish because you know what, Matt? If he did call me, he would be in for the rudest of surprises. Because what person would want to call me to start trouble?
Yeah, I don't know if you want to start the
I'm line, not right? my what I want to say. I'm not going to say on air, but it starts with Yuna and ends in Er. So anyway, we'll anyway, good luck. Good luck to the people of Nashville that participate in this. And please, if you have a lawn care company, don't do it. Or when they send you a $1,000 bill to get your lawn back into shape, just pay it and do not bitch about it at all. Also, don't coming out of Michigan State University here, Dr. Kevin Frank of the Department of Plant, Soil, and Microbial Sciences released, when is the correct time to apply pre-emergent herbicides in the spring? And he uses the old picture of a blooming forsythia. And I think this is that when I was coming up in this industry, that was the standard. Is that if
that's
you
how
see
you did it, right?
Forsythias in bloom, yeah, you better make sure you're getting down your pre-emergent. And then it goes into more detail here using a system that would be considered more of a professional approach, and that is using growing degree days. And I also list the GDD tracker and effectively talks about where it starts counting growing degree days at a base 32 degree Fahrenheit. And then as you start reaching your optimal time to apply, which here they have marked at beginning at 250 growing degree days up to 500 growing degree days, that is really your prime time to get it down. You could be a little bit early if you start encroaching, you know, 171, 175 growing degree days. But talking, you know, actually trying to put forth a scientific model rather than just saying, March 15th is when you need to have it down. Instead of listening to YouTube, what was our fine words? Yeah, I should know who these researchers are. I just don't.
I should know who these researchers are. Yeah,
minimum viable level of knowledge. Not interested. Sorry, I'd just rather sell this to you. Mm.
Yeah. By the way, do you think?
I don't know how to tell you the crack's made. I just tell you the crack. Mm.
Do you think Dr. Frank is explaining people where to buy growing degree days? Because if he can't tell you where to buy growing degree days, then it's probably not something you should follow. God, Ron Henry is amazing.
He's probably going to sell you those solar eclipse glasses too, so that you know when you take, you know, don't accumulate any growing degree days for those 3 minutes and 48 seconds of totality. You know, he will sell you those. By golly, grass is going to need shades.
Put these lenses on and stare at the sun. They're magnifying lenses. Turf fields may have forever chemicals. Should kids play on them? It's almost embarrassing to me that this has to be written into an article, but you know, here we are. It is 2024 and things are getting weirder. I would not say necessarily easier. Three 6-year-old girls stood on the sidelines as their coach swabbed their hands. They ran onto a lush green field, played soccer for 90 minutes straight. No stepping off the pitch. This was just a practice as part of a small experiment conducted in the suburban foothills of San Diego last summer. Children's assistant coach swabbed his hands too and shipped the samples taken before and after practice to a lab in Lancaster, PA. The scientist would test them for PFAS. Parvini and his players, all members of the San Diego Surf Soccer Club, are among the earliest test subjects in emerging research focused on whether PFAS and artificial turf pose a meaningful health risk. Debates about artificial turf are happening at school boards, city council meetings, and town halls all across Massachusetts, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, New Hampshire, and California, and other states. On the other side are some scientists and turf critics who say the presence of PFAS in turf is worrisome, given what is already known of the toxic effect of the chemicals. But turf advocates and other scientists say there's no reliable evidence showing that PFAS in turf pose a risk. Proponents also say their synthetic fields require less water than grass, don't need pesticides, allow for more frequent competitive play without the potholes or mud pits that need tending to on natural fields. Anyway, test results from the San Diego soccer kids experiment found that two of the three players, including Parvini's daughter, Emma, came off the turf field with higher amounts of PFAS on their hands than at the beginning of practice. So did Parvini. When the players practiced on natural gas, the results were mixed. Two of them had a decrease in PFAS, while Parvini was found to have more PFAS on his hands. The new soccer balls also had detectable amounts of PFAS before they were used on both fields. The experiment was funded by the Public Employees of Environmental Responsibility nonprofit that goes in. Anyway, blah, blah, blah. I don't think there's been nearly enough studies to know, said Christopher Kasotis, an assistant professor in the Institute of Environmental Health Sciences at Wayne State University, who is preparing to conduct a study over whether the chemicals found in turf can affect the endocrine system. There's very little work here on human exposure, and there's certainly a piece of the puzzle when it comes to risk. Anyway, it goes on and on. It actually closes out with the great debate over artificial turf, and I think this is just beginning. We're seeing more and more of it, but really, as far as the answers we have, I would say the number of answers we have is about none. No one has really any definitive answers, except we know that PFAS is a problem. We know PFAS poses a health risk. Outside of that, where the dots connect and in what ways and how extreme is it, or how mundane or non-extreme is it? No one really fucking knows right now. And I think that is legitimately scary and should cause some concern, especially at the rate that artificial turf was synthesized. And no pun intended, but it is a pun. It was synthesized as being this answer to the great toxic wasteland that they ultimately dubbed grass, right? Well, come to find out, probably not quite as toxic as the artificial turf that they ended up putting in. And so a lot of backtracking, a lot of like, well, and no one knows what the fuck to do now. And so here we are. I'm curious, y'all have any takes on this? Like, is just something you're just like, burn these guys to hell, see what happens? that was extreme. I didn't mean that. I'm thirsty. I'm dehydrated. I just leaked out.
Yeah, that's what. Yeah, he's talking about adult babies, and it's all over the place today, folks.
Still weird out.
Yeah, it is. It takes a little while to get over something like that. You should probably seek therapy, I think.
Shaddox, help me.
It's good to see that they're looking into this, right? From what's out there. You know, the synthetic turf industry has come out and basically said, hey, you know, we've got manufacturers that are now voluntarily removing any added PFAS, right, from their manufacturing process. And they kind of detail that in the article about how they're used in lubricants that help when they extrude the plastic, you know, heat the plastic resin and extrude the fibers out. That said, it's very carefully worded that any added PFAS, right? Mm-hmm. So that tells me that there's probably some in there still, right? And so the issue is that, okay, if there's 18,000 fields, you're putting in 1,500 a year, that doesn't necessarily account for what's out there currently. So, you know, what they're doing there in San Diego, what they're doing on the East Coast, and trying to understand, you know, just what happens as these fields weather and age and things like that. And there's also some lab studies that are being done too, that they allude to in this article. It's only a good thing to understand what those effects are. And, you know, seemingly too, on the natural side, you know, what we can do there to, you know, be better stewards and, you know, make those services just as safe too. So I think there's a lot of things that are coming into play with that. The whole thing about, you know, mud holes and, you know, can't play three sports on fields, that's bullshit. That's a really, really poor excuse. It can be done. It's being done all over the country right now. So I think there needs to be a little bit more introspection from the folks that hold those beliefs.
I think it's a matter that basically there's like extreme polarization in that there are people that are just anti-natural grass and anti-anything having to do with natural grass, and so therefore they come up with all the reasons why you shouldn't have natural grass, because you know what, guys? I see that for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm now thinking, okay, when these fields all age out, I want to know where the hell are we going to put all this toxic waste that is now artificial turf? Where are we going to properly and safely dispose of it? I want to know that because, you know, Ryan, the number of natural grass playing surfaces here in Hawaii mm-hmm. is outnumbered by artificial turf installations.
Yeah.
Did you know that?
I wouldn't be shocked to learn that. And I think it just comes down to, again, people in decision-making roles thinking that this is the easier way to go because they don't have to take care of it, so to speak, right? They can just simply stroke a check every, you know, 6, 8, 10 years and have something new out there.
Ryan, stop right there. Not even that, yeah. Because the problem with something like that here in Hawaii is that, as you've seen with the Aloha Stadium, mm-hmm. the turf surface aged past when it should have been taken out and redone, and that literally caused issues when the women's soccer league wanted to play on that surface. It caused an issue.
Oops.
And it's because what Hawaii and many other municipalities are bad about is they are just shitty at doing required maintenance and replacement of things that are at end of life. Because when something's at end of life, they think, oh, I know we're supposed to do this, but we don't have the money. So you know what? It's going to have to go for another 10 years. Tough.
Well, there's that. And on the flip side, too, something I don't think they measure it in this article, but you know, they're talking about recycling fields now. And that is something that's happening. However, they're getting put back into the same field. So if those PFAS concerns still exist, right? You're simply diluting mm-hmm. down you know, the shit already. So anyway.
Yeah, Dave Clawson had a good one here, and he said, wait till microplastics becomes the headlines, right? Because what's going to happen is they're going to look for alternatives in for PFAS, right? And so you'll find things like polyurethanes and others, and then it's going to be just the sheer volume of plastics that end up accumulating. Because again, I don't know if anybody caught the headline. I think we talked about it last week, that it was talking about looking at a plaque buildup in the heart when they analyzed it. The amount of plastics that accumulated in the heart and arteries mm-hmm. Was incredibly high as well, right? So it's not going to just begin and end with PFAS, right? It's still going to have to deal with the fact of the overwhelming amount of plastics introduced into the environment and are making their way into us as well, right? So that's where the fit's going to hit the shan. Okay, we're over time. We might repurpose that a little later on, but yep. Real quick, I just want to make this point is that, by the way, we're able to do this because of listeners like you. Whether you listen to it on a podcast, you watch it on YouTube, however you choose to do it, we don't give a... we do. We don't care how you consume. All we care is that you have consumed. And if it includes a bourbon or not, it's probably none of our business either. If you had to take a 2-inch hooter to get through it, well, by God, you had to do a 2-inch. Be careful. A lot of them contain fentanyl now. Anyway, point being is that we're able to do this because of our Patreon, patreon.com/burnandreturn. We are appreciative of everybody that hops on, hangs out with us. If you're into that kind of thing, it gets a little wild on the back end of this, and that's where all of our patrons hang out. If you're into that kind of thing, by all means, please come join us. Have a good time. It's a collective. It is not a collective, but it is a collection of dudes who have a genuine interest of learning more. And that's the one thing I can guarantee out of it. But other than that, I promise whether or not you're here, we will continue to get up here and make absolute asses of ourselves because we are assholes. We're not scumbags. Hey, Ryan, let's check out this week's Jono Sir.
Oh, boy.
Jono Sir. Hi, I'm Joe. I'm gonna give you a bunch of accurate turf facts today.
Because
Joe knows turf.
Yeah, Joe does know turf, and you know what? Joe was so nice that we featured his friend on a recent episode, and he's crawling in our comments again. Good to see Joe still out there and kicking, not just selling. Not just selling those titty hats and not doing anything with his grass. He's a faithful listener. So, okay. So this evening, this is a gentleman that was brought to our attention probably a few weeks ago, and I've just not had a chance to review or look at any of the content and everything like that by multiple people, both inside and outside our community. It was sent this stuff, and I get a laundry list of items that come through every day. So without further ado, we're going to make sure that if anything bad goes down, we're going to call Chad. Better call Chad here on YouTube.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Chad, and I'm going to go over the best spring fertilizers for you to use. It's March, and it's time to fertilize for our warm season turf grasses. If you've seen some of my videos and you want some help, I do online consultations, and I also have these awesome lawn kits for sale that help you with pest, fungus, and weeds, all measured out, guide by guide, how to use it, so you're still doing it yourself, but it's like I'm there to help you. If you're interested in any of that information, email me at turforganics904@gmail.com, and I'll send you over that information as well as the information in this video. So if you want to reach out to me,
in what you're going to show me in this video that's going to make me want to do that. I'm sure you're really going to ring my bell here.
Organics904@gmail.com is the best way. Also, sending a like in this comment on this video is really, really help. Talk about spring.
All right, so he's going to talk a little bit about when to fertilize the products that he recommends, right? And really kind of comes in here at the end and seals the deal. And I guarantee you, if I asked you right now, and I gave you three guesses each, you would not pick the fertilizer that he is going to say is the best fertilizer to use. Okay. I guarantee you won't pick it. All right. Now, this gentleman is in Florida somewhere. I don't know exactly where. A lot of his videos are about St. Aug lawns, things like that. So I'm going to guess, probably somewhere central or maybe the northern part of Florida. We'll see.
Yeah. I see some dormant trees in the background. So I'd say central Florida.
Okay. Let's slide up here to the next chapter here when he's talking about when to fertilize. I think actually he's getting ready to start right now. So yeah, right there, he's got the map. Go ahead and play this real quick.
Have on the screen here, and you can see most of us the warm season are in 10, 9, and 8. Most are going to be in 9 and 8, but South Florida gets, of course, 10. If you are in zone 10, early March is going to be absolutely your best time to fertilize. So that's going to be when you want to bring out your spring fertilization, get your lawn back going, because in zone 10, the soil temperatures really don't even drop that low. So you can go ahead in early March and get that fertilization out. Now, zone 9 is a lot bigger of one. And I would say zone 9 is anywhere from mid to late March, depending where you're at in zone 9. If you live closer to zone 8, so like North Florida area would want to be around a late March, where Central Florida area would be closer to mid-March. That's a good guide. Anywhere in zone 9, depending on how cold of a winter you've had, that's going to be mid to late March is going to be the time to use this spring fertilization. Now I'm going to go over the best type of fertilizers as well. And now zone A.
Okay. So real quick.
He's going to say Anuvia, isn't he?
He's got it. He got everything out of the scratch and dent bin from the sheriff's auction. Now, sorry. Okay. So with this timing, guys, we always talk about the 4 hours. Right time is one of those things. If, you know, we have some viewers, some loyal listeners down there in Florida and, you know, points just north that are going to be starting there. What would you say, right, in terms of your timing? We won't talk about products just yet because we're going to get into that here in a second. But just from a timing aspect in that area of the country, I'll let you two pontificate.
I honestly don't know. I've never managed turf in Florida. So I'm going to assume, just based on what I see behind him right here, it would be okay to fertilize. But my reservation with it, and I'll say this, is that where I'm in a conundrum right now is that, yes, it's greened up. However, this is probably pretty strong large patch season where he is. And the fact that the trees behind him haven't fully leafed out is what would give me cause for concern. There's something about fertilizing warm season grass when the trees haven't fully leafed out that weirds me the fuck out. It's a mental thing I have. So I honestly don't know. I have no idea. I don't know what I would say.
Right. Fair enough.
Educate. Right.
Okay. What I would say is he is literally too early for where he's at because grass is not really actively growing it. Plants aren't actively growing it. And from what I know, you put nitrogen down right in the thick of large patch season, congratulations, you won the prize. Okay? You won the prize.
You know, right, when I was in Augusta, we weren't fertilizing warm season grass until after the Masters, right? So, and you know, according to this map, you know, that's eight, right? But I will say it wasn't fully greened up and, you know, just not ready. I mean, you might have a couple cuts on it, you know, probably get your first cut on warm season grass by the time the master shows up, get your first cut. But I would say before you're going out there with a 3404 or whatever, and, you know, goosing it a little bit. Yeah, I mean, you're probably still a week or two away from getting that done. So, you know, mid April at the earliest you get after it. Now, if it's overseeded perennial ryegrass, then yeah, you know, you've been having a great time and it's your lawn literally looks like the Masters where they're playing on overseeded perennial ryegrass. Right. So you know, there it is.
All right. Let's talk about his favorite fertilizers here.
Eight is going to be late March and even into early April. Those areas get significant.
There's a cut. When keep going up. Yeah, right there. Let's talk about his favorite fertilizers.
Now, the first fertilizer is the Andersons 24011. This is a great fertilizer. It's got plenty of nitrogen, slow release, and it's got just about a half amount of potassium. This is one of the higher nitrogen fertilizers, but it is a slow release, so I feel very comfortable using it. I really wouldn't go anything over the 24 nitrogen, but overall, this is great. And then we have the Less Goes 24011. To be honest,
don't go over 24, Demay.
Don't go over.
Do you know what happens? Between 24 and 30?
Equal to or less than, right? Remember that sign from math class, sixth grade?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Equal to or less than? Well, what does old boy think? Yeah. What does old boy think about 4600? Which is exactly what we've been telling a lot of people to use when they want a fertilizer.
I use this. You know what? When I use my 4600, I use the Shattuck's brand. That's the name everybody knows and trusts. That's right. Shattuck's brand, Julia. 4600. Find it anywhere.
I use Dr. Frank's grown degree days.
Yeah. All right. Mm-hmm. Let's play it.
Between the two is probably very minuscule. I would go on what you can probably get the best deal on if you really want to get the 24011. Either one of those is great. Whatever's the best price, that's what I would go for. And then we have the Lesco 24211. Phosphorus is not something, especially in Florida, we want to use a lot of. One, it's not the best for our ponds and streams and rivers and things like that because it can create algae blooms at excessive levels. And it's not something the lawn needs a lot of as well. But I do like a little bit in the blend. So in my preference, over a 24-0-11 to a 24-2-11, I like that 2-phosphorus. It's a very little amount, which is not going to do any harm. And it kind of puts the whole formula together. That way you're getting all three macronutrients, nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium, all in one blend. And I feel like they all complement each other really well. So a 24-2-11 is one of my favorite fertilizers just because of that blend of all three macronutrients. Then we go to the lower end nitrogen fertilizers, which is still works well, is the Anderson's 1608. And this has humic acid in it, which is awesome. Getting a fertilizer and a soil amendment out is great. And now I know it's, of course, not nearly as much nitrogen, but I always tell people, you can always apply more and you can't pick it back up. You can go ahead and do that 1608 with the humic acid at whatever the recommended rate is on the bag, see how your lawn looks, or even less than that, see how it looks, give it a month. If the lawn hasn't quite responded how you'd like, go ahead and apply a bit more. So you can always go back and apply more nitrogen to get your look that you're going for if you use something that's a little bit lower nitrogen like this. But the humic acid is an extreme benefit and is almost like a steroid for the fertilizer. That will complement the fertilizer very well and help it be more accessible to the plant.
Oh my goodness.
What is the siren going on? Is that the fertilizer police coming to whoop this guy's ass? Is he going to get tased?
I hope so. God. I hope so. Or no. Inside thought, Matt, and if you know, you know, maybe the DEA is looking for him.
We've had this guy on the after show before. Do y'all remember?
I don't remember this.
Yeah. I remember.
Yeah.
But you know what, Matt? Here's the thing is that I remember in previous after shows, he didn't look like this. What's up?
No.
Time's okay. Boy's looking a little saucy. He's been lightweight. Lightweight.
Yeah, we covered an interview he did because he's an entrepreneur, and and he was interviewed as an entrepreneur.
Hi, I'm Chad. You have to watch the end. Today we're gonna go.
Yeah. Is this the one we did?
This was him. Yeah, this was him. This is what we did back in February of this year.
Uh huh. Mm-hmm. We got to Google and found he was in near the Jacksonville, Florida area. So interesting.
Oh, boy's been a damn. Yes, sir.
All right, let's find out his favorite.
My
favorite product.
Favorite overall. It's the most expensive. So,
all right, I'm going to give you guys one guess real quick. What do you think it is?
I was going to go Milorganite.
Milorganite. What do you think, Ray? What do you think?
I think it's going to be protein.
Oh, you guys are close-ish. We'll see, but it's another flashy, well-known YouTube brand. Let's hit that play button.
So I really don't blame people for getting this because the price is quite high, but the benefits are also quite high because it's delivering a lot in one bag. And that is the Anderson's 1648 with humic acid and micronutrients.
Never would have guessed that. You were absolutely right. That was nowhere on my radar.
Man,
I was thinking maybe he's like real on some deep shit, like some wood ace, you know, like actual legit hardcore ass fertilizer, and it was gonna blow my head off. Do y'all know like the acidifying wood ace fertilizers that are out there, primarily manufactured for tree shrub, and it is expensive. It's $60-$70 a bag commercially, right? Pretty badass little fertilizer when you look at the label. Not once, not ever would this have crept into my head at all.
Now, listen, if you're a professional lawn care applicator and you're taking advice from this, right? how many pallets of 18-pound bags of PGF Complete are you going to need at your shop in order to get through, you know, round one? What do we think?
A lot. A lot.
We're going to need a Houthi captained freight vessel full of fucking 18-pound bags to get ourselves round one done.
We need a Gaza floating pier of aid delivery right off the coast of Jacksonville to keep me fed.
Or let's let him finish. You can, you know, do it the other way and just have a little bit of 2100 and be done with it. No need for all this bullshit.
This one has it all. It has the nitrogen is twice as much as the potassium and it has a 4 phosphorus, so a little bit more phosphorus. 4 is about as high as you would ever want to go on the lawn, and you would only want to apply that 1 to 3 times a year, ideally 2 times. But those low numbers of phosphorus are going to be okay, especially using at the proper label rate and being responsible with it. But again, I love all 3 macros. Is a great blend to put those that fertilizer together. Nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium.
Put some effort into that one. There's nothing like a dump truck of fertilizer granules right by a lake that make me feel super comfortable.
This has got to be a sticker.
That makes me feel.
This has got to be a sticker on a fucking channel for sure. This has to be.
And on top of that, and look at what low grade crap fertilizer this Anderson stuff is, and. You know, guys, listeners,
going to be the
realize that Anderson's is normally marketed to golf and sports turf people, so they have fallen very low from grace making this shit. Okay, they've fallen very low from grace.
I think Anderson's is taking all. You know, Anderson's, because they do manufacture primarily for or blend, you know, process blend. They do some granulation too for golf and sports turf. That, you know, you have out of spec material sizes that you have to deal with, right? And you accumulate it over a long period of time. And they're like, where do we put it? Oh, it's a perfect out of spec material for. You know, legit TNO, so we can move it into the homeowner market, and we can get people like Better Called Chad here to simp sell for it. And you know, what's the other one? The other fucking absolute insane dork in Georgia, Doc. How to with Doc? We can get absolute fucking clown shows like these guys to tout it as the second coming of Christ, and it gives us a way to get rid of all this material that we've. Screened off so we can keep our product quality high going into the markets that we actually give a shit about and you know, still make a little money back on all the losses we took over having to screen out this garbage and from a business decision, I get it. You got to find a home for it. It's not like you can just fucking landfill it, you know, but again, you know, there's a sucker out there for just about anybody.
It's the other plant in Georgia you're thinking about.
I'm still just thinking about him being in the trenches, listening to bullets whizzing over his head, and the bullets of the fertilizer industry.
You were talking about landfilling product waste. I was talking about the other manufacturer in Georgia.
It took me a second. I was like,
yeah.
I mean, everything is going on at Georgia Ram. We got Ron, we got Unlawn Ron Henry. We got How To with Smoking Cock Doc. Give me off here.
Hey, Rabosh Henry. That's what we're going to call him from now on. Hey, Rabosh Henry.
we got to get to this week's burn.
Keep it going.
Oh, sorry.
Humic acid as a soil amendment, humic acid can help have more nutrients available to the plant. So you can get more out of that 16:4:8 having with a humic acid blend. And then on top of that, micronutrients, which I call the vitamins for the lawn. So this is an all-around blend for your lawn. Like I said, it comes at a high price, so I don't expect everyone to do it when you see that, but it is an absolute great blend with everything you need for your lawn, and it's a wonderful start to the yard. So my two favorites would be the Anderson 16-4A with humic acid and micronutrients, and then the Lesko's 24-11. Those two are great fertilizers. All of these are great fertilizers, but those two are my top picks to use in the springtime to get your lawn going.
Maybe the 1 gallon earth.
And again, timing is really important. In my preference, I'd rather fertilize a little bit later than a little bit earlier, because if the soil temperatures aren't right and we're still getting cool nights, your lawn's not going to wake up and respond no matter how much fertilizer you use. I mean,
the most honest thing you said. Good job. Attaboy, Chad.
Let's put more of that 16 out there, though. That 16 will.
Yeah. 16 is the answer. What about Super Rainbow 16-4-8? I mean, that's a homogenous.
That's the Key West blend.
Yeah, that's the old school there.
All right, let's move on to this week's birds.
Thanks, Chad. Fire! Registration open. Never mind. No, you go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that Sheila's had a lot of fertilizer in her basin over the years, kind of like Chad was about to do right there. All right, now we can go.
She's not intimidated by numbers bigger than 16, that's for sure.
Registration
is now open for... the bigger, the better, baby. Cavities... Or yearning for more. The Lawn Equipment Exchange Program, Valley residents exchange their dirty, operable, gas-powered lawn equipment for electric mower, leaf blower, or string trimmer at a discounted price. You can get an RMA 460 kit, push lawnmower, charger, and battery pack for $120. Oh, wait, look at this. Leap event exchanged a total of 227 pieces of equipment, which averaged a emission reduction of 275 pounds per year of hydrocarbons and 41 pounds per year of nitrogen oxide. Sorry, this article is putting me to sleep. RMA 460 volt kit, self-prepared lawnmower with charger and battery pack for $300. A BGA 57 kit, a blower and charger for $75.
Yeah, this is that, right? No, I don't put this in here for one person. This is Aldo.
This is Aldo, backyard. The Imperial Valley. I know.
Go back there and take it back, Aldo. Get rid of it.
Can you break in and just steal all those equipment in the middle of the night? That's what I'm curious.
If you're a method and you look at those people in that article that we read last week.
That they are scoping this with drones and everything else. Like they are ready to make a move. They're learning how these people sleep, eat, shit, everything above. Wow, man. I was actually curious of what it was going to say here. And I was like, hey, look, we actually have an exchange going on. But when they said exchange their dirty, operable, gas-powered lawnmower, I was like, okay, all right, I'm out. According to WIRC here, this is ABC8, Colonial Downs Control Turf Bone postponed again due to weather. This is in New Kent County, Virginia. The Colonial Downs racetrack has been forced to reschedule its yearly burn of their turf. Not once, but twice due to unfavorable weather conditions. Earlier, it was postponed due to forecasted rain, but now it's been postponed a second time due to high winds. Sorry,
they were gonna have Matt. Matt was gonna come in and do it, but they did a background check and that arson citation that he got just clipped him. Get across state lines like that.
These people are pushes. I'm gonna throw that out there right now. Like. They can't handle what the level of heat, the kind of smoke that I bring, they just want no part of. But again, I do come with the disclaimer that not only will I burn your turf, I'll burn your entire existence to the ground because, well, I have no throttle. It is
two
all
words
gas, no brakes.
People. Total loss.
Insurance. Dave, you might want to call total them before I show up. Get them. Yeah. Get their premiums done. Yeah. The next one here, Iowa DNR finds no living fish in fertilizer contaminated river. I don't mean to laugh, but Jesus Christ, that is not a good headline to read.
I've never dealt with a situation like this before.
Yeah, this is not good. A massive fertilizer spill at the East Nishnabatna River, south of Red Oak, happened. And anyway, downstream of where the river joins the West Nishan, something the fisheries biologists of the Iowa Department of Natural Resources did some surveying there, and they found a couple of carp that they were dying. And I said, man, never had to deal with this before. He evaluated some 50 river miles over the course of 4 days to determine the scope of the fish kill. He has not fully tallied the estimated number of dead fish on Friday, but noted that there were also numerous dead frogs, snakes, mussels, and earthworms. Yikes! An open hose valve leaked about 265,000 gallons of liquid nitrogen fertilizer. If I had to guess, it's either UAN-32 or UAN-28.
Yikes.
265,000 gallons at 10 pounds per gallon, you know, so basically every gallon, and we'll just call it 3 pounds of nitrogen. So 265,000 times three, that would be almost 800,000 pounds of nitrogen that went out there, boys. That is a metric shit ton of nitrogen. To put that into a tonnage, that would be the equivalent of 400 tons of fertilizer that just got dumped right into the water. No bueno. However, this was such a large amount of chemical, it more than likely killed the fish from acute toxicity, killing cells at the gills. The lasting impact of the fish populations is not clear. Lorenzen said many of the game fish, such as catfish, walleye, are likely still in the Missouri River, where they could stay during colder months until returning to Nishnabotna rivers in the spring. Large numbers of small fish, which the bigger fish feed upon, have died, but those populations can be restored by fish that survived upstream from the spill or in numerous tributaries that were not affected by it. It's possible that the fertilizer killed turtles, too, that buried themselves in sediment in sediment of the river bottom for winter. Lorenzen plans to return to the area in late spring and see whether turtle carcasses have floated the river surface. Jesus, if you have a well near the area, have it tested for nitrates.
Because
you sure as shit don't want to get poisoned that way. Big Fubar, who was the cause of this spill? And just real quick, I'm just going to click that link and see if it stated. It was reported by New Cooperative, NEW. NEW Cooperative. One of its employees noticed a leak and stopped it. A large tank, which holds about 500,000 gallons, is in a containment and to prevent wider spills. So it looks like they lost over 50%. So New
Cooperative. So this thing, it says this valve was leaking, but this was in a transfer area. So it says the tanks have containment, but the transfer area does not have the same containment. How the fuck?
Nope. No containment. So all it takes is
hard piped.
Yeah,
hard pipe. But then you see, why doesn't the area where vehicles are loaded with this liquid fertilizer, why isn't that under containment? Because like I know in my state, anytime you're dealing with liquid anything that's being, you know, moved, requirement is for secondary containment. You know, that's just how it is.
Well, apparently in this area, you just pumped that shit right in the water, and because dilution is the solution to pollution. Anyway, man, bad news there. No good. Let's check out this week's returns. Maybe we'll have some. Calderson, that's about Nick's yearly nitrogen average.
You know, what's the analysis on that again? I can't remember.
16.
It's over 24. Yeah, it's over 24. That was the
problem. It's over 24. Yeah.
Right there.
Could be 28. Could be 32. Chad.
Could be 32-0-0. Yeah.
32. Someone had better call Chad. And if Chad had them on a 16, if you do that math, it could have only been half. It only been 400,000 pounds of nitrogen that spilled. And that's the difference between a dead turtle and not a dead turtle. They're all dead. Farmers are using AI to help feed the planet. It's a video we got here. If you just want to play a couple minutes of it here, we'll talk about Verdant Robotics and see what they got going on.
Much of the innovation in agriculture, it's been how do we replace slow
high cost.
I love farmers wearing all Hurley gear now. More efficient. Skateboard dudes or farmers.
Kind of gotten to the end of mm-hmm. what bent metal can accomplish or what chemicals can accomplish.
If we're going to produce how we need to and, you know, feed the planet, there's no doubt that automation is a preordained thing.
That guy drinks a whiskey and smokes cigarettes without a doubt.
Agriculture is one of the largest and most
important. And he writes really sad songs. I'd hang out with that guy.
Tech and AgTech focused VC. And we're certainly one of the most prolific investors in the space. We do a lot in ag robotics. You know, Verdant is a good example here. If you just use, you know, first level, maybe second level imagination to imagine what technology could do on a farm, you don't have to stretch yourself that far, but you need some of the best technologists in the world.
And this is the wiring harness that you've got your...
And that sort of underscores like the level of technical talent that we need to underwrite to solve some of these problems. People want low-cost food. They also want healthy food. And so there's a whole set of constraints around what the consumer wants and what it costs to produce that and deliver that. You know, I think about
the government could just subsidize it all.
You had people who were coming talking from the to Ray. Driverless car industry, yeah. And I mean foundational engineers, and we basically made a
it's not like we're in debt.
These
anything.
Guys, you are not ever mm-hmm. going to find a better team.
Very small form factor, which allows us to put it on all sorts.
And if they cannot do this, it's unsolvable. There's just no one better. They're using, I want to say 99% less chemical than sort of a traditional solution. This is really important because when you go out on fields, you might normally go and broadly spray everything, right? And chemicals are extremely powerful and extremely useful, but you might not want all that chemical concentration all over what may be your food in the future. But chemicals are also really expensive. So if you can find ways to reduce that, just target that exactly to the plants that you're trying or weeds that you're trying to kill without getting any of those chemicals on the other plants. So this is just sort of, it's like a triple win-win-win when you think about what this can do on the consumer side and on the business side and the health side for these companies.
So as we spray, we have these hard drives that we store all the data on.
What we do is super precise delivery of atoms on target. High speed spraying down to millimeter accuracy, you know, parking an organic herbicide between carrots that are less than an inch apart, so that ultimately we're saving on labor and also those chemical inputs are used much more sparingly. Labor and chemical inputs are the number one and number two cost in growing, and so we really seek to bring those efficiencies to our growers so that not only does their bottom line change and
Matt,
be positive.
I see something wrong with this.
What do you see wrong in it? Because I like it. I'm not going to lie. Don't tell me.
Oh, okay. I'm going to tell you something. I don't know of any farm implement that runs at less than 1 mile per hour like that.
This is
thing.
True. This is
okay?
true.
Okay. I mean, that's not going to happen. I mean, people have got shit to get done. And this device running at less than a mile per hour is not going to happen. I mean, actually, Matt, this right here is the Malthusian's dream.
How
make agriculture?
Look, they're talking about saving labor, right? How many fields are in this perfect condition for spraying ever?
Yeah, yeah,
right. And not only that, how slowly this thing moves. You're going to have to cut down field size massively. I mean, the amount of acres that you can manage with this kind of technology is far less than what is normally done, because I know that a boom sprayer is running at 15 to 20 miles per hour. They're hauling ass. They got to get it done.
Yeah, I'll say that counter to that, I do like the fact that private investment money is interested in this, right? Because I think the rate of innovation that can come from private investment is far greater and beyond what is going to be able to happen just through natural evolution of time, right? And, or government money being pumped into it. So seeing these guys get out there, put some real cash behind it and develop something that, all right, we've got it operable now at one, right? But we have the software now and the photo eyes. How do we improve upon the hardware, the photo eyes, because we have the software in place now, right? So I think this actually is a good start. Now I'm going to go ahead and plug out of Cornell, weed scientist Lynn Sosnowski, Dr. Sosnowski up there is probably the one who I see that is doing just a monumental amount of work with companies like Verdant Robotics here on looking at alternative methods of weed management and doing everything from lasers to everything else. And it's cool to see that these people are putting them into the hands of universities and, you know, just giving them a run for their money and be like, you know, hey, find out what works and what doesn't look. And at least for anyone who publicizes it, especially with like difficult to control weeds like Palmer Amaranth and some of the others, I'll say that Dr. Sosnowski seems to be, you know, out there in terms of one of the front runners on it. So anyway, I'm not going to cut it out yet, but I think Ray does bring out a very, very valid point to this, that, you know, you're not going to cover 10,000 acres quickly when you're moving 1 mile an hour and you're only covering, what is that, 3 rows? You got 3 rows that you're covering there. That is not a large area at all. Okay. And especially at 1 mile an hour.
That is
2 mile an hour. Yeah. 10,000 acres.
No,
I mean, eternity to get done. An eternity.
Yeah. You see, this is going to only work if field sizes are drastically reduced. However, Matt, you know what happens when field sizes are reduced, don't you? We know what happens. I mean, this is the future. And I know we all like to talk about not having the scarcity mindset, but technology that is not scalable and it's not able to be productive induces scarcity. It creates scarcity.
Yeah, and I think it's still early to say that whether or not this can be scalable. Of these are just now starting to show up, and so I'm sure there's a lot more to go. And it's like when we first started seeing robotics, and you know, we're 6 years into it, and implementation is genuinely just now starting to scratch the surface. So if we're seeing it now, you know, in 6 years, what is this going to look like? Have we gone from covering 3 rows to 18? Are we moving from 1 to 9 miles an hour? And then all of those start to look a bit more practical, right? So anyway, I still think it's cool, I'm not going to lie. Although Hurley guy, probably not the guy I'm going to drink beers with on the weekend, but the other dude who's a whiskey drinking cigarette smoker that writes sad songs, that is. Guy right there. All right, we are going to wrap this up. We're going to go hang out with the patrons and let them choose the title of this week's video. Again, check us on all your favorite podcast apps, on the BoobTube, whatever it is you like, or just come hang out with us whenever you want over at patreon.com/burnerreturn. Hop in the Discord, say hey, make a fool of yourself. I promise no one in there is going to be more of a fool than we will. So anyway, we'll catch you on the flip side. Have a great week out there. Bye.